This is what it's like growing up in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, and 70s and beyond. I'll start with beginning college in the fall of 1959. I graduated high school June 17th, 1959. And the summer after graduation was my first job. It was in an office answering the phone. And I enrolled at New York University as a major in English with emphasis on professional and creative writing, with a minor in anthropology and psychology. The interesting point, it was 1959 in New York City. And since there was no money for college, I had to work full-time and pay 100% of the tuition to work my way through college for the next 6 years, going to college some semesters full-time, working in the summer, some semesters part-time, working full-time during the day, summer, and winter. My first thought when I applied to college was I wanted to take the easiest major possible. That way, there would be pretty much a guarantee that I would never fail in any course or get low grades. And if I got high enough grades, I might qualify for the New York City Scholar Incentive Program. And the Scholar Incentive Program of the 1950s and 1960s gave students full semester tuition for whatever semesters that they needed, and their only qualification was to get high enough grades, which I guaranteed myself, hopefully, which I did, by majoring in the easiest subject possible that I picked, knowing where my gifts and talents would be. What I knew from my high school courses was my major talents, where I got my A grades and A plus grades, was in creative writing, writing short stories, novelettes, journalism pieces, anything to do with writing and editing skills, grammar, and I guess you would call it editorial skills. New York City was one of the publishing hotspots or centers of employment in the 1950s and 1960s. This was way before the merge of the what they call brick and mortar publishing houses. At the same time, I knew even if I couldn't land a choice position in publishing in New York City, at least I would have a high school teaching credential and a community college teaching credential to teach English, language arts, journalism, creative writing, and any related subject in my major or in my minor. I had two minors. One was in psychology and the other was in anthropology, which I loved very much. Now, these were courses I took precisely because I could do well in them. I got A's most of the time in these subjects, and it didn't require thinking, what they call critical thinking, that I would have had to do had I taken courses in the sciences. Now, I had a career aspiration because of my high grades in science in high school, that I could teach biology either in community college or in high school. But the requirements to be a biology major were so much harder, that is, required so much more study time than taking a major in English, where you would read poetry, novels, and write poetry and fiction, or journalism pieces, or learn copy editing where you'd make up newspaper headlines in a journalism course. These were easy because they didn't require critical thinking. It required more of intuitive feeling or reflection and use of words in creative ways, thinking outside the box, so to speak. So that was my choice. For the first reason, since there was no money for college, taking the science major would have required me to put a lot more study time into courses like calculus and chemistry and biology and microbiology and virology and so on. And even though I was deeply interested in these subjects and had a 98 percentile on my final exams in high school in science courses, I was a little bit afraid, what if when I was working full-time, there just wasn't any time to study? The scientists, that required opening a textbook and studying it really in depth. But when you read a novel, you're not thinking as deeply in the same way as you would be thinking deeply in a creative writing situation where you would focus on writing dialogue while writing a play or a script or fiction. So since I had been writing articles, poetry, plays, and stories since the age of 11 and a half when I was in the seventh grade, and did well in this, I figured I'd go along, since I am working full-time from the age of 17, right after high school graduation, and so I majored in English. And the courses definitely were easy. I enrolled at New York University and took courses starting with the first semester in creative writing and comparative literature and American literature and British literature. I took a course called Stone Age Religions. I took anthropology courses. I took courses in psychology. And all of these courses were pretty easy. It was based on reading books, which I sat in the New York Public Library and read. And interestingly, I got a job in the New York Public Library on 5th Avenue and 34th Street, and I was able to work there summers full-time and earn enough money to pay my tuition at New York University, which at the time was $150 per credit. So I paid about $400 per course for 12 credits, 15 credits. And when I worked full-time, I took 6 or 9 credits. I remember several years of working full-time at the New York Public Library. And my job was simple, to hand out magazines on the first floor to anyone who asked for magazines in different languages, magazines from all over the world. And most of the time I had to stand on my feet all day and just hand out those magazines to people who came in the library to read magazines in the library. And in the time that I wasn't waiting on customers, I would be sitting with a pencil and an index type of a card and entering new magazines that came in with the name of the magazine and the date. So it was very simple work, and the people that I worked with were in different fields. One woman I worked with was a young ballet dancer in classical ballet, and another was working her way through college, and students like myself who needed to work full-time to earn the money to go to college. And when I got out at 5 o'clock, I had an hour to eat, and then I had to take the subway to my 7 p.m. class at night. And it was a little bit safer in the late 1950s in New York City using the subway at night. So from 7 to 9 p.m., I'd be taking courses at night, usually 6 or 9 credits per semester. And in the daytime, I'd be working from 9 to 5. Since I live near the beach, it would take me almost an hour to get into New York City to get to the public library on 34th Street. And I'd probably work from between 8 and 5 or 9 and 5 and go to school from 7 to 9 and then get out maybe by 9:15, get on the subway at the 4th Street station. I think it was West 4th Street. Take the subway back towards Coney Island and to the beach area. And then about almost 45, well, a little more than 45 minutes later, arrive at my home and then have to walk 2 blocks from the subway to my apartment. And I was doing this for several years, and it got tiresome working full time and going to school at night. But finally, I was able to find out about the Scholar Incentive Award, and by the last year of college, apply for this $600 a year Scholar Incentive Award, which did pay my tuition. And that was happy because then I could take my full-time courses as a junior and senior, and I didn't have to work full-time anymore. I could work part-time and go to school with 12 or 15 credits and finish my Bachelor of Science degree in English education. And that was pretty pleasant experience. I loved my courses, but I felt when it came down to getting a job, what helped me get a job was not anything that I learned in college. I had one grammar course, which thankfully I got an A in, which allowed me to have the editorial skills to check other people's writing and make sure that their grammar and spelling was correct. But my real interest was writing novels, plays, and scripts, or short stories. I also love writing poems. This didn't really lead to any type of job, and a teaching job required a credential, which you needed your 5th year or your master's in the field, and a certain amount of courses in education to get your teaching credentials. So what I focused on was trying to get a foot in the door of the publishing world so that I could get a job as an editor or an assistant to an editor. And I felt that nothing that I actually learned at college was useful in any way that I could think that landed me a job that paid a salary. During the 1960s, the late 1950s and the early 1960s, I looked for jobs in different offices because all of the jobs I had were temporary. The job in the library was temporary. The job I had in an office answering the phone and doing filing was temporary. And the one thing that set the jobs apart between men and women, when a woman applied for a job, no matter what company it was, the first thing they were given was a typing test. And to get the job that was open to someone without a degree in a specific technical area outside of the teaching field where you needed a credential was to be able to pass the typing test. So you needed anything from 60 to 70 words a minute typing. And the typing test was a speed test and an accuracy test. So if you had two, what they called crossovers, that is, make two typos, you failed the typing test. And the speed of words per minute was subtracted from your test so that it weeded out a lot of people who could type but just didn't like to type at the highest speeds and made one or two typos that they could correct by backspacing with whiteout on the tape and so on before the age of the digital work. And so the jobs were that. You had to pass the typing test if you were a woman. Men were never given typing tests unless they were applying for jobs in the typing pool. And most men applied for jobs other than being in a typing pool with many other women. And the only jobs that I could find outside of the public library clerk of handing magazines out to people or putting back books on the shelf, which were all temporary jobs that were offered to college students at the time, required that you work only on a temporary basis. So nothing was permanent. And what I was looking for during my college education and after graduation was a permanent job that would allow me to have my own apartment where I could pay rent, buy food, and be financially independent. And this was real important to me, to be able to get a job to support myself so I wouldn't have to depend on people for the rest of my life for food, shelter, and clothing. So I continued to apply for jobs, and after earning, I finally was able to earn a master's degree in English with a concentration in creative writing. And I wanted to get a job in the publishing industry. Men were given different types of tests, not typing tests. They were tested on their leadership ability, on their sales ability, on their public speaking ability, on their management ability, or on their skills in a technical field like electronic technician. They were not given tests in typing. When you went for a job, for example, I applied for a job at a news service, and I noticed all the men with bachelor's degrees were working as writers, as journalists. Here I had a master's degree in writing and a bachelor's degree in writing and in English with some journalism training background and things like copy editing and how to write headlines. And where was I put? I was given a typing test and put in the typing pool with a dozen other women, typing the manuscripts that the men wrote, and typing and then packaging their manuscripts as press releases in cardboard folders to go out as portfolios to go out to other media services like newspapers. What I worked for was a news service that sent articles to other newspapers and magazines as press releases, and I ended up in the typing pool typing press releases while the males were actually writing the press releases, interviewing people at the companies, and then giving the, I guess you would call it, rough draft to the women to type without errors, having passed a typing test at 60 to 70 words a minute that was required, and then packaging the press releases with photographs and having them sent to various publications like newspapers and magazines and TV anchor people. So the jobs that I had in New York City, working my way through college and shortly after, had to do with typing up other people's dreams, thoughts, research, work, creative interviews, and everything else that I had aspired to as a, I guess, editor or newspaper reporter. There was no way out of the typing pool, and I had concluded from that the only way that I could survive financially, to be financially independent, was based on only the seventh grade course in touch typing that I took when I was 11 and a half years old in middle school. That basically was the only thing that separated me from poverty, was that ability to pass the typing test. So everything I learned in college, all the plays by Tennessee Williams or Ibsen, all the novels that I read by the famous American novelists and the British novelists and the comparative literature and the great novels of history like War and Peace, none of it was relevant. None of the plays I read was relevant to actually finding a job and working my way through college and thereafter becoming financially independent from paying for my food and shelter and clothing. Nothing. Now, my parents were not able to give me any money because my father was a disabled veteran from World War I, American veteran. My mother was a homemaker that didn't earn any money, even though she was an accomplished classical pianist and a wonderful painter and illustrator of flowers. Basically, she wanted to be a housewife, and that's what she was. And my father, as a disabled veteran, wasn't able to get work that had a high enough income to send me to any type of school. So I had to earn this by myself, which I knew from my early childhood that I had to do. But what surprised me was the job scene after college. The college courses promised so much that I would get all of these teaching jobs, that I would have I guess a government job with a pension and perks and free medical insurance because I had the ability to apply for a teaching credential. And if I worked for 40 or more years as a high school teacher or a community college teacher, I'd end up with tenure and a pension and anything else that goes with tenure as a teacher. But none of these jobs were actually offered. And what I found out, much to my surprise, was that there were so many more college graduates with degrees in English than there could ever be jobs enough to support them in the teaching field or with the government that paid these pensions and perks and salaries that would be high enough to be able to pay rent and eventually buy a house and pay the mortgage on it to reach upper middle class. So there was absolutely no way that I could see how do I go from where I am with no money or very little and all these degrees to reach the middle class and hopefully the upper middle class in the editorial field or in teaching. And then when I finally worked in jobs related to teaching, the first job I got was as a teacher's aide, and it paid close to minimum wage, and you were only allowed to work as a teacher's aide if you took at least 6 or more credits per term. So after graduation, you had to keep taking college courses that cost money and didn't lead to anything just to maintain your job at close to minimum wage. And so it was a little bit scary. And trying to get a foot in the door in publishing in the late 50s, early 60s, and 70s was almost impossible. Because every job I applied for as a technical editor, technical writer, editorial type jobs that I was qualified for, had a policy where you apply for a job as a technical editor, but where they placed you was in the typing pool. And if you had any work as a technical editor, all you would be doing is correcting the English on papers that were written by engineers, technical papers. And after a while, you'd be shoved into the typing pool, and new people would come on board at the company, and they would be hired as technical editors. And then you were pushed into the typing pool. And the men were working as technical writers and technical editors, and the women were in the typing pool, except for the ones who were very close friends with the manager and those people that were promoted, for example, the technical editing manager was a roommate of the boss. Two women lived together, the single women, and one hired the other for managing the technical editing. And she had a major in psychology. But coming in, the first question I was asked was, did you ever work before? And this was about 1976. And I said, yes, I've been working since 1959. And I was looked at as someone who had been a housewife coming in for the first job, where the manager didn't even realize that I had, at the time, had written 29 books and had a background in writing, even though the jobs that I was getting were temporary jobs, filling in for someone who for 3 months was on maternity leave. It was almost impossible during their 1973 recession to find a permanent job. So all the jobs that I found were temporary for 90 days, working in various editing, typing types of jobs. I applied for jobs at the university, and I was given a typing test, and if I didn't type fast enough, that's the end of the job. Or most of the time I was told, you're overqualified. You have a master's degree in English, you're overqualified to work as a typist. So we'll give you a temporary job and see what happens. And so the temporary jobs were temporary. The last job I had was in 1973, and I had worked for a very small newspaper that went to people in the military. I started working in the editorial field, writing a column for the weekly newspaper, but my main job was to sell classified advertising and display advertising over the phone, and then take a bus, since I never learned to drive, take a bus down to the place of business that bought the display ad and work with the owner on what they wanted to put into this display ad and what type of photos and so on. Then they hand me the photos and tell me what type of copy to write. So I was actually doing ad copywriting, sales work, handling the photos, and then giving it over to the technical department that would actually take the photos and print them into the newspaper. All this for $1.65 an hour in 1973 to 1974. And it was really hard. This was a recession going on. They called it the 1973 recession, so jobs were very scarce. And I had a choice. I could take teacher's aid and work for close to minimum wage, as long as I was taking 6 credits or more at any college or community college. Or I could work for $1.65 an hour selling display and classified ads over the phone for this weekly newspaper. Or I could work in a personnel agency placing people in jobs. All of these were temporary jobs. They created a loss when I had moved to California that you can no longer apply for a job teaching in high school unless you pass the CBEST. In order to pass the CBEST, you have to take an exam that is not in your single subject teaching area, which would have been English or journalism. Instead, you have to take a course that included geometry and algebra. And that course, I haven't had any math courses that I could remember for years since I was in middle school. At the time in the 1973, I was in my early 30s, had no exposure to math, and in no way could even contemplate passing a CBEST course, I couldn't even get through a fifth grade math book. And it's something that I had extreme difficulty in learning. So I'm going to admit it, I have never been able to pass fifth grade math, sixth grade math, or anything beyond. No way, I have dyscalculia. I can't pass these math courses. I have no problem with fourth grade math. I can add, subtract, and multiply, and divide. Beyond that, no, I can't pass the test, can't pass the CBEST. But what I can pass is I do have good verbal intelligence. I can write, I can edit, and I can type. And I have a specialty talent writing dialogue, as in a play or a movie script, which I write all the time. I have written many scripts, many plays, many novels. No problem. No problem getting A's all through college. No problem with my anthropology courses or psychology courses. Fine, it's all based on verbal intelligence. So I use this skill. But coming down to the brass tacks, the only thing that I could do to get a job all my life, that I looked for work, depended on that seventh grade touch typing course that I took in middle school. Without that skill, the only other alternative would be customer service, waiting on tables, or perhaps handing out magazines at the public library. Filing skills I had, no problem with filing. So I worked in different offices, all of them for temporary office services. Every job I had was a temporary job, usually to fill in for a few weeks, up to 3 months, with the exception of the selling classified and display ads that did last 7 months. It paid $1.65 an hour, and I was able finally to pay my rent and buy food on $1.65 an hour in 1973. Now, my solution to the problem, here I was, 30-something years old, and at the time single and making $1.65 an hour, have a master's degree in English, and the only job I can find, temporary typing, filing jobs, registering people at conventions. Simple clerical work that required really no special skill. And everything was close to that minimum wage. No, that wasn't enough, because my rent, that was $135 a month for a beautiful apartment in Pacific Beach, one-bedroom apartment, now was raised to $158 a month. Could I afford it on $165? No. Basically, what I did to get through the 70s was revert to something that my grandparents and my great-grandparents, as suffragettes in the 1920s marching for the woman's vote, would never have liked. I put a husband wanted ad in the newspapers, and I found 135 letters from young men who were interested in marrying a 32-year-old woman. Well, I did find someone, non-smoker, non-drinker, nice person, got married, he paid the bills. And I still continue to work at these temporary typing jobs. Always dreaming of a career as a newspaper reporter or an editor in publishing or making money from creative writing. Teaching I tried as various substitute teaching jobs in community colleges. In 1985, I was able to get a community college credential for California, and soon after was able to work one or two days every few months teaching creative writing. But these jobs faded away, and the community college credential was eliminated in California. So it wasn't needed anymore, just your master's degree. But still, there were so many more college graduates applying for these jobs, and no jobs were open, or so few that they took people who had the most experience and were the youngest. So a 25-year-old person with 3 or 4 years' experience was taken over the 45-year-old woman with no experience, with the same amount of degrees in education, because the insurance that they would pay would be less for the younger person. But what I liked about growing up in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, at least there were a lot more jobs available, even though women were limited, really limited. One of the things I remember reading was of Rosalind Franklin and how her work was not really valued as much as a male scientist's work. That discouraged me also from getting involved in sciences, although as a science journalist today, I cover research, and all I write about mainly is what people are doing in scientific research as news. So I'm a science journalist. But back then, it frightened me that someone that I knew personally, it happened to be a very close friend of mine who majored in math and chemistry at New York University. She had gone to high school and middle school with me. This was a neighbor that lived down the block. I was friends with her and her cousin. And I watched as she graduated on a full scholarship from New York University, majoring in math and chemistry. And the only job she found, a brilliant girl and a straight-A student, was as a computer programmer on one of the first computers that came out in 1963. And I remember sitting with her at a dinner, and we're talking about how hard it was to find a good job as a female in the early 1960s. Doing what you are qualified to do and what you studied for in college. And here she's being trained in doing computer programming, which opened up a career. Later she went to graduate school. And the job in computer science didn't really need someone with a degree in chemistry and math. Anyone at the time could go to computer school and learn to be a programmer. So her math background definitely was useful. And I believe she went to Yale eventually and eventually got her PhD and did get into the field that she was prepared for. But the average college student majoring in liberal arts had a hard time finding a job if the person is female. The males didn't. Most of the males were on the GI Bill. The draft was on. They got jobs as teachers. And they were lucky, and those that didn't get jobs as teachers did get into editorial work much easier than women. Now, luckily, I did get the Scholar Incentive Award that paid in the last year my tuition, so I was able to finish my college. At the same time, I did get married after college, and then I got married a second time in 1974. The interesting thing about college is when I went to the university in 1959, some of my talents were in learning foreign languages. So I took courses in things like French and Russian and different languages, and my master's degree in creative writing allowed me to write short stories in French. And this was easy at the time. So I realized this is where my talents are, in learning languages that were easy to learn and in writing in the languages and doing work with grammar and editing. Now, in 1959, people like myself majoring in English had the choice whether to enter editorial jobs in publishing or newspaper work or teaching in community college or high school. When I was studying for my master's degree, and when I also moved to California and continued to take courses for, I guess, personal improvement, I found out the graduate courses I took were only $94 for full-time course programs. So it was much easier in the 1970s in California to take a full college master's or higher or postmaster's certificate or whatever you wanted to earn and still pay either graduate or undergraduate $94 a per semester for full-time course programs. And in New York in the 1950s, to get into colleges like the City College of New York, Brooklyn College, Queens College, and so on, was free if you got a 90 average, which is a straight A average, in high school. But if you got an 85 or a B plus average, you had to pay. And the students with the 90 average or the straight A average were lucky. They got into Queens College, City College, and Brooklyn College. Didn't have to pay any tuition at all, just the books. And that was great because a lot of my friends did that. Back then, people that we knew that were tenured in full-time jobs had an ideal job that I thought, as an extreme introvert, coming from a family where the father and mother are extreme introverts, that we like quiet college libraries. We love to work in that. Everybody would love to work in a quiet university library. I would have loved to get a master's degree in library science. That would have been an ideal job, even though it wasn't as creative as publishing. It was not as well-paying, but it was, I thought, more secure if you could get a government job in a library like the Library of Congress or some other city job working as a librarian. So that was a choice I should have made instead of trying to get a job working as a publishing person, an editorial job, reading manuscripts of novelists, which was at the time my dream job, reading other people's novels and deciding whether or not we buy those articles for the publisher or working on the editorial part. But I figured what I really would have loved would have been to be a college or government librarian. I was interested in subjects like history, history of science, and so on. It would have worked well. My issue was that where I lived at the time I decided to be a librarian was not where there were schools of library science. So my $94 a year education ended up at a state college after I graduated from New York University. And at the time, I was married and had to find a college near my home rather than try to figure out where to go to library school out of town. Also, I'm a nun driver, and I was never able to pass my driver's test. That's not the writing part. That was the driving part. So that was out of the question, and also there was no money to buy a car. Now, what I was mainly focusing on was, as a liberal arts graduate, why so many doors were closed as far as career, because I figured had I found a full-time job that was permanent rather than hundreds of temporary office typing jobs, it was a feeling of looking outside from being in the home and never really finding what I would call a dream job until now. I have a dream job, but it doesn't pay anything. It's simply writing articles with no guaranteed pay, but it's the dream job. Now, I'm totally reliant on Social Security, retirement Social Security income, and it does pay for the food and the vitamins. But I would have loved to be able to say I had a 45-year career as a librarian or a teacher or some type of work that dealt with data or helping people find data through research much more than teaching face-to-face. And when I was young, that was the alternatives that were within reach without having to leave the city to find a graduate program or money to pay for it or money to pay for living expenses in another city. Naturally, there's no way I would leave my house and husband to go to another city to become a librarian. So I had to find work where I was, and I was in this one place. Now, what liberal arts students and graduates who enjoy working in bookstores, for example, probably are more extroverted than people who like to work with data. I found extremely tiring jobs with customer service. I can deal with a one-on-one with one or two people, but it becomes so exhausting when you just don't have the energy because of this genetic introversion. That's not the type of job you would want permanently. My dream job would be working in a library or in a museum and dealing with data, or basically just writing book stories and articles. When you have liberal arts graduates, you find nowadays a lot of them are going back to college and studying nursing because that's where jobs were open after the 70s and in the 80s. And you have a need for people like physical therapists. The problem with the healthcare jobs is the waiting list is really long. And I think changes have been happening, and the problem now with journalism majors is that journalism is outsourced. You have a trend after the 1970s where the major publishers of newspapers and magazines were merging. There's much less or much fewer of the large publishers. And then you have a proliferation of blogs online and publications online. And a lot of these publications outsource writers, some of them overseas, some of them locally, but they outsource them. And a journalist today may get paid, if lucky, $20 for writing an article. Back in the 90s and the 80s, it was normal to pay a writer $300 for an article for a print magazine or more. Some people working for large publications that were really popular got $3,000 for a 3,000-word article. So they were paid a dollar a word, some even more. In the 1990s, when I worked freelance for a magazine, I was paid about $250 for a 2,500-word article, which is that dollar a word. And then all of a sudden, when the magazines began to merge, it dropped to 10 cents a word. And then it dropped to 1 penny a word. And finally, it drops to 1/6300th of a penny for an entire article that depends on how many clicks, how many people go to the article online. Since the 1990s, I've been writing books and articles about digital journalism, writing online, writing all types of articles like medical news and science news online. But it pays so much less, so many fewer dollars or pennies per article that you have to work so much longer. And you have the advent of citizen journalism in the field, where people write anything that they want as articles and they're not paid at all, or they're paid pennies. So the market has changed, and it's changed drastically. If I could go back to the 1950s, when I was in high school, what would I have chosen if I knew that the only job I could get in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s was typing? The first thing I would have learned then were three skills: shorthand, bookkeeping at the secretarial level, or full charge bookkeeping, and typing. And as the computer age encroached, I would have learned working on word processing, learning to do Excel, Access, Office, learning to do bookkeeping in an office, learning to do shorthand and typing. And as the dictaphones and the digital recorders improved, you had less demand for shorthand. For example, in 1960s or 1970s, had I taken a commercial course instead of an academic course in high school and learned 120 words per minute shorthand and 70 words a minute typing and secretarial bookkeeping and filing, those four skills would have allowed me to move to Washington, D.C., apply for a job with the Pentagon or the government, and get paid $85,000 a year or more after a few years as an executive secretary, had I taken these courses in high school, or even gone for a year's training, or even 2 years' training in a secretarial school as they had them in the 1950s and 60s. Because if you went to the highest paid executive secretaries in the government, they were paid upwards of $80,000 a year in some cases with a high school education, as long as they took that 120 words a minute shorthand, perfect typing, and maybe a little bookkeeping and filing, and learned when computers came how to work with Office Professional, Excel, Access, PowerPoint, that type of software programs. And that does not require any type of college degree. So if I knew in advance that that's how I'd be spending 45 years of career work, I would have been with the secretarial course in high school, saved all that college money in college years, and just got an office job, and spent my time reading books in the library to learn to be a writer. But having spent 6 years in college to get a master's in English and a bachelor's in English education, I'd like to know how I applied it now that I'm in my mid-70s, pushing 80s in a few years. How have I made use of these degrees and all the money I spent and all the years I spent working to pay for it? So it's a conundrum that I'm thinking about. So basically, what I would like to say, and the advice I would like to give to people, is major in what you do best, because you're going to do it for more than 50 years. And at the same time, acquire the skills in something that the market requires in order for you to get your foot in the door of the first job that's not just another temporary job that's going to end in 3 or 4 weeks. And that's about it. And my conclusion, after all the books I read, and I spent the last 5 years reading books on nutrition, because I write on nutrition now, is that you need to find an area that needs your energy. Sometimes it's health care. Sometimes it's the law. But right now you have so many unemployed lawyers. People in journalism are going back to law school and then finding they can't find a job as a lawyer and they can't find a job as a journalist. So then they go and they learn CPA accounting, and finally they get a job as a CPA accountant. But they have the aptitude not to be an accountant, but to be a journalist or a lawyer, which deals with their verbal abilities. So it's open. But unless you have some type of skill that you can transfer from one job to another, how are you going to find a job when the market changes and no longer needs your skills? If you're too specialized, your job will be outsourced overseas. And if you're not specialized enough, you'll get the answer, either you're overqualified or I don't have the time to train you, from employers. One message that you need to remember for anyone: you are hired when you pose the least financial risk to an employer. And in the past, one of the books I wrote that's now long out of print was Designing Employee Tests, Personality Tests, which may change from one day to the next. And I found that executives who hire people are looking for a system. Leaders want a system. Employers want a system. And what a person applying for a career needs is to find out what's the system used to weed out the people. I once went for a typing test for a temporary job doing office work, filing and typing. The first thing I was given was a Wunderlich test, an IQ test. And I was told if you score lower than 22 on the Wunderlich test, you're not going to be sent out as a file clerk or a typist or a receptionist. So the interesting part is they didn't give you a test on your loyalty and your honesty, which should have been what they would be giving to a job applicant. They gave you a Wunderlich intelligence test and then sent you, if you got 22 or higher, then you would be sent out for a temporary job that may last one day or 6 weeks, just doing basic office work, filing, typing, answering the phone. So now it's spreadsheet ability. In the 1960s, no one was required to do spreadsheets because we all used IBM Selectric typewriters. And in the 1970s, it was the paper tape word processors that used paper tape holes in tape to type on, and we would be typing insurance policies. So basically, after hundreds and hundreds of temporary jobs in various types of office work between the years of 1959 and 1981, my conclusion is do what you like, do what you do best, do what you're going to be stuck with for the rest of your working life, and at the same time acquire skills that can be transferred. Right now the trend is outsourcing journalists overseas. And at the same time, there's popular majors. But what happens when there are too many college graduates with the same or similar skills? Then you have a mismatch between what people major in and the most popular majors of the decade. And then again, what jobs are actually open? Should you major in bioengineering or electrical engineering? Should you major in healthcare? Well, what you could do is look at a book called Occupations with the Most Job Openings, or you can look at the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics called Occupations with the Most Openings and see what's going to be open in the next decade. It's all about what's needed now, what the salary is, and what will be needed in the next few years, and how many people are applying for a job compared to how many jobs are offered. But basically, when I look at my mother's life and my mother's mother's life and her mother's life, these were the women who were suffragettes who marched in the 1918, 1915, 1920. They marched to get the vote for women. They got the vote for women. I have photos of them marching, getting the vote for women. And then what happened? The women were given typing tests and put into the typing pool. And a thought that occurs to me, I guess a memory that's hard to forget, is sitting in the typing pool week after week on a temporary job and always asking the employer, how come the men are being hired as journalists and writers and stringers and correspondents, and the women are all sitting in the typing pool typing up the thoughts that the men had as newspaper reporters? Why aren't any of the women working as newspaper reporters? Hey, I have a degree in this field. Why am I always stuck in the typing pool? Well, the next day, you're fired just for asking a question. Yep, and that's the way it was. So I hope this was of help, and people in the field that I was in, which was communications, English, journalism, editorial work, I hope they look into the situation now, the trend in outsourcing journalism overseas and the lower pay of some journalists and the competition and what's happening in the field, which is now all digital or mostly digital, and how copywriting may be a little niche that you can get into with copywriting, working in marketing and sales if you're into writing. But that's the way it is. And now, like I said, in a few years I'll be 80. I still love writing. I still love working with photography and digital journalism and digital photography. So I guess to conclude, I'm the author of 91 paperback books. I'm so happy I had this career, and even if it doesn't pay me a dime, it was my dream job. And those that need the money for food, shelter, and clothing, do what you want. But whether the money will follow, that depends on what the market wants. And the market wants the employee who poses the least financial risk to the company. So have a good time and think about it.